As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. This may be the best show we've ever had for a variety of reasons. One, no Craig Cousins, not here, always positive. Two, our big guest today is a very handsome, very charming St. Louis legend. That's right. It's Jeremy Rutherford.
Oh, How are you doing, buddy? No, that's not it. That's not it. Oh, man. Even I was ready for that joke. Yeah, I was ready for that. You had to deliver John Hamm. You had to John Hamm. Not.
We got John Hamm on the show. It started out as a joke, I think, between Craig and I, and then turned into an actual thing because Jeremy's got the Rolodex. He's a close personal friend with John Hamm. I think that's it. That's right. You guys are best friends.
That is not true. Seen him a few times, but we worked it out with Mr. John Hamm, and he joined us. What a fun conversation that was, Sean.
It was a blast, and somehow I didn't ask him about the town, and I didn't ask him about Mad Men. We talked about the Blues. We talked about St. Louis sports. We talked about the new Fletch movie, which he's in, and in Fargo season 5, which he's shooting in Calgary. And we talked about some St. Louis area high school football sports stuff. I think that's going to hit so hard with the St. Louis crowd, right? Because everyone loves whenever we delve into like local specifics.
It's so provincial. Yeah. And John, as we'll find out later, he went to John Burroughs High School and I went to Lutheran South. And so we were in the same league, but John, 51 years old, 47, I'm 47. So we just missed each other in terms of playing varsity football against each other. He would have been jealous because Sean, when I left the game, I always left the game and was headed to a party with the cheerleaders. I'm sure he had a lot of trouble, you know, post game.
No, John was going home playing Super Nintendo by himself, obviously. The best part of the start of the talk was that John rolls up in his Ivan Barbashev like special St. Patrick's Day jersey. JR is wearing his Letterman's jacket. I was like left out of the St. Louis party, so I just had to sit there and act like I knew what you guys were talking about.
Sean, he actually, he was at a game in Vegas a couple weeks ago, and he's a huge Barbashev fan, which he'll talk about. But he had two jerseys on. He had the Barbashev underneath, and I think they were trying to promo the retro reverse jersey that I know you love, the Blues one, right? The yellow one. But
I kind of liked that one. That wasn't me. I think it was Lazarus who was like, who was anti, if I remember right, naturally.
So he had the O'Reilly retro reverse on top of the Barbashev jersey, just because he was trying to promo one of them for the broadcast. And the two guys who scored the goals in the third period for the Blues, Barbashev and O'Reilly. He's always Mr. Good Luck, that John.
What a world. What a world. We'll start with the Blues. We have you here. We have him. Talking about them at length. We're recording this on Tuesday morning. We talked to John on Sunday afternoon. Things have gotten worse for St. Louis. We talked about, we talked about the Binnington Zucker thing and about just the kind of up and down, you know, roller coaster of a season they've had so far. What we saw last night was, I don't know if that was meltdown territory in the third period for them. The Rangers scored three straight goals in the third to rally for a 6-4 win over the Blues at the Garden. JR, what happened there? And maybe just give us like a top line view of the issues that have kind of cropped up for them again over the last little bit.
Yeah, Sean, first of all, you know, I'd just like to say up front that, you know, no jokes here, no pot shots, no ripping on a team that's been down all year. You know, I think it's to a point where you have a really good team on paper that just hasn't gelled. So with that said, I think what we saw last night has kind of been the storyline of the Blues season. And so that's not a pot shot. That's just what we've seen a lot of this season. Craig Berube said it afterwards. He said this team lacks confidence. Interestingly, if you go back to December 2018, when he took over from Mike Yeo, that's what he said. He said this team lacks confidence, and he was able to restore that for the Blues. This year, he's been unable to do that. When they lost 2, 3, 4 in a row, people asked me about him. I said, hey, they'll be fine. It's early. You know, Craig Berube has done this before, and he'll get them through it. And then all of a sudden, they lost 8 in a row. Then they win 7 in a row. Now, if they didn't come back in the third period against Florida with that miraculous comeback, 4 goals, you know, they're sitting on a 7-game losing streak right now. So it's just been a difficult season, and it was epitomized last night what you saw there in the third period against the Rangers.
I think the last time you and I talked was whenever Doug Armstrong sort of alluded to some potential changes being made. This is, you know, gosh, last month,
right?
3 weeks ago or so. It's hard to see something like last night happen and listen to the things that Berube has said and just his tone and all that stuff and not wonder if, you know, obviously you're going to, if you're Doug Armstrong, you're going to come off the maybe someone needs to go off this roster talk whenever you're rattling off 7-8 wins in a row. Like, that's going to change. But is that mindset, is that concept something that we could see from them again? Like, is it possible that they do turn back into, go back into potential evaluation / sell mode here in a little bit?
Yeah, I think that he's constantly in evaluation mode. The one thing with Doug Armstrong, I've said this before, is that, you know, he's a really good evaluator of how good his team is, whether it's playing well, not playing well. In a playoff spot, not in a playoff spot. And so I can, you know, without even talking to him, you know that he doesn't like what's going on and the makeup of this team and the way they're responding to things. He has said that Craig Berube is not the problem. He said, you know, forget about dismissing the coach. That's low-hanging fruit. But you look at this roster, Sean, and a lot of the players are on long-term deals. Like, with the exception of O'Reilly and Tarasenko, who are both pending UFAs, you know, those are the two guys that could change things, change the face of the team if you were to move them. But, you know, who's talking about moving high price pending UFAs in early December, right?
Right. I mean, that now is kind of the context that you and I talked about them, you know, last we spoke was a few weeks ago when we collabed on just kind of trying to assess who's got trade value and who doesn't, when it really did seem like that was, you know, not too far down the road. And it is, man, there's a lot of money tied up into a lot of players over a long, long time. Whether it's, you know, the Tory Krugs of the world or Brandon's, like there's a lot of guys on long-term deals, and moving that in December of the regular season, if these guys have 3+ years or 4+ years on their deals, that's a tough sell. It's a classic situation. And this is an area where I feel like teams always get in trouble where they like to, and we've seen it with it with the Vancouver Canucks, the pieces that they like to change are not appealing for other teams, whether it's because of the length of the contract or the number or the player or whatever. And the tradable pieces are the ones that they don't want to move at all, right? And there, I think there's a lot of analogs between what's happening in Vancouver, to a lesser scale, obviously. St. Louis's season isn't a disaster on par with what's gone on with the Canucks, but it's the same thing, right? There's players at the top where that nobody wants to get rid of, but then below that, it's like what actually would be the benefit to moving these guys other than starting a full scale teardown where you just take whatever you can receive in terms of cap space, right? And I think that's kind of the mushy middle that teams don't want to be in.
No, and that's the risk you run when you elect to go the route that the Blues have gone. And listen, Doug Armstrong's got more hockey knowledge in his pinky fingernail than I've got. But what he decided to do was keep as many of these good to you don't say superstar, but good players in the fold. And to keep them under the cap, you've got to lower that AAV, which they're going to want term in return. And they've done that with a Braden Schenn, 8 years. He had a year left, so that's nine. Same with Colton Parayko. He gets an 8-year deal. He had a year left. That's nine. Falk and Krug came in, and they got, 7-year deals. So he's been able to keep these guys together, but when it goes south like it is here, it looked just impossible to do any sort of retool at the time.
It's wild, and it's something that's, you know, it's not going away. Like I think that's sort of the point in the season where we're at now. We're a week or two outside Thanksgiving. Like it's time to, you know, the stratification process kind of continues where we're figuring out which teams are in sell mode, which teams aren't. The other bit of news that happened over the last 24 hours or so, Shane Wright being recalled by the Kraken. He's, you know, obviously the fourth overall pick in the draft this past summer. He's had a rough go of it. He's just coming back from a one-time AHL conditioning stint where they kind of moved around the loophole to get him five games in the American League. He's going to play against Montreal on Tuesday night. This is still, you know, a little bit of an okie doke for I. It seems like it would be foolish to expect Shane Wright to stick around all that long, because Ron Francis has said as much. Dave Axel said as much. They're going to try to get him a game or two because the Canada World Juniors camp, and this is crazy, it starts on December 9th. So you're looking at a potential scenario where Shane Wright, before he hits the 10 game threshold, you know, where his entry level deal starts, could bounce back down to the World Junior team. I mean, like there's a lot of uncertainty there, and it's just a reminder. I think the Shane Wright saga has been. It seems like we get one of these every year or two. Where, oh God, the agreement between Hockey Canada and the American League and the NHL League, where you have these guys that fall between the cracks of this system, where it's like maybe somebody is too good to head back to juniors, but not good enough to play regularly in the NHL. In the American League, you know, ceases to be an option for them just because they're not 20 years left. This is all just a reminder of how it's one of those things where I know you need, it's about protecting the financial interests of junior teams and whatever. That's really what it boils down to. But it is crazy to me that this is still an issue that we're talking about after it's happened every couple of years. It seems like it's popped up, right? Jerry, I don't know if you've ever covered anybody who's kind of fallen into that trap in St. Louis, but it is kind of disappointing to see it happen again here.
Actually, I have a really good example. Robert Thomas, mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, it was 2018-19, and he could not go to the American.
Would you believe that I knew that happened and was just trying to tee you up for it?
Tee me up. Yeah, I thought you were onto that. Yeah. So Robert Thomas, he can either play for the Blues that year, or he can get sent back to junior. He could not play in the American Hockey League. And what does he do? He goes and wins a Stanley Cup in his rookie year with the St. Louis Blues. Not only that, but he was a big part of it too on that third line with Tyler Bozak and Pat Maroon. So this is an interesting situation with Shane Wright. And Sean, we can go back to being in Montreal for the draft. And I think they played like a Shane Wright video about 10 minutes before the draft on the Jumbotron in Montreal. People in the stands were clapping and applauding, and then they went the other direction. And disappointing for Shane Wright as he slipped to number four. you know, it's been a little bumpy ride early on for him. He gets in a few games, and then all of a sudden they find the loophole with the conditioning assignment. He can go play some games in the American Hockey League. And he did. What did he have? 4 goals in the first 3 games and played pretty well. So now he comes up and look who he's playing. They're going against Mark Paul in his first game back. You know, the one thing that I want to throw in this, and I haven't thought it out completely, but I'll just bounce it off you. You know, will he stay the year with Seattle? You know, everybody focuses on the 10 games, and that's what burns the first year of that entry level. But the key thing is the 40 games. That's what gets him closer to 7 years in unrestricted free agency. Yep. So what about if he goes to, you know, World Juniors and obviously misses a lot of NHL games, plays well, and then you bring him back to the NHL, and then maybe he doesn't get to that 40 games?
That seems like the most logical outcome here, right? And it, all the better if they can, who knows, maybe they get him, you know, they get him to December 9th. He plays one more game. That will put him at 8 on the season. Heads to Canadian camp. That at least gets games under his belt, because that's the issue with Shane Wright, because of pandemic stuff, because of opting out of the last World Juniors. Like, that kid hasn't played. And now because of the way his first NHL season's gone, where it's December 6th and we're talking about him getting into his 8th game, he hasn't played a lot of hockey, and it needs to happen somewhere. And it seems like the Kraken have bridged that. They're almost there. They've almost bridged that gap to getting him, you know, as high level competition as you're going to see in terms of junior stuff for 3 weeks or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden you're in January and you have the potential maybe for an easier, if they want to get him out of Kingston and have him, you know, traded to another junior team, on and on. All these variables that we've heard about the Shane Wright situation over the last month, like if they get him one more game and then maybe send him off to training camp, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at him playing a bunch of games, you know, moving forward. And then certainly, if nothing else, JR, like you said, staying under that 40 game threshold, because it wouldn't be ideal if he plays 11 games, and so then whatever, that sucks for them. That's like worst case scenario. But if you can get him in 35 or 38 NHL games, getting meaningful minutes after, you know, playing in that junior tournament, I think they'll have done well to salvage. Honestly, it would seem like a pretty jacked up situation. But before we jump to John, I did wanted to point out something that Sean McIndoe wrote that ran on the site this morning. If you're into more Kraken coverage, I'm not going to go too far into every point. But I do agree with him. We are already at the point in the season, JR, where we're getting mea culpas from McIndoe, and I'm sure from me and from all the guys in that class. Sean is already copping to having been wrong about the Seattle Kraken. Maybe not completely wrong, because he's not totally sold on them yet. But that's an interesting team, and they've been better than we thought. And part of the surprise. Is that they've done it without getting anything from Shane Wright. If you'd have told people at the start of the season, what's a reason to be optimistic about the Seattle Kraken? You're saying, all right, they have some added juice at the top of the lineup with Beniers and Shane Wright. Certainly has been the case with Matty Beniers, not been the case with Wright. But yeah, I thought it was a good look at McIndoe just kind of hitting reset on the Kraken season for, you know, I think there's a lot of people who see them in the standings. They see that they got the 688 points percentage, that they're 15-6-3, second in the Pacific, all that. But I don't think they quite know how they got there. And I think McIndoe did a good job of kind of teeing all that up.
Yeah, and I agree with you about that in terms of if they're going to do something, Wright's got to be a part of that. But I think, you know, for him to come in and play real well was going to be a tough ask, you know, especially on a team like that, right? So I think if they were going to take off, you know, the rest of that team, the veterans, some of those guys just had to play better, or else it wasn't going to happen regardless of how Wright played.
I think people have kind of internalized the idea that Martin Jones is played well, and I don't know that that's necessarily true. He hasn't played terribly, and obviously they're winning games, so credit to him. But if this is going to stick, they're going to need some extra. You know, they're going to need him to play the way it looked like he was playing early in the season, even before that, you know, 8-goal meltdown against the Kings or whatever. And one more point. Bruins 14-game home winning streak ended yesterday. Vegas, Bruce Cassidy snapped that in the first night. JR, what's the longest win streak that you've ever covered?
Oh, the Blues.
Do you have it off the top?
Yeah, 10 or 11 games, I believe. Yeah. With
does it get boring writing about that many wins in a row? Like, what do you say about win number 10?
Yeah, you kind of get to a point. You know what I think I did, and this is a luxury we have at the Athletic. I don't think that I wrote about every single win, but after they won the 10 or 11 in a row, you just kind of take one highlight from each game. This is why they this is why they won 10 or 11 in a row. This is what happened. So, but this year, and not just with the Blues, Sean, but you look around the league, and shoot, you could be writing about a 10 game winning streak, you know, 1 2-week period, and then you're writing about an 8-game losing streak, you know, the next stretch.
It is wild. It's like there's parity overall. If you look at, you know, there's so many teams that are grouped between like the 6 and 23 or whatever, but it's not like the way they've achieved that is not through, you know, win a game, lose a game. It feels like every team is on the roller coaster and just kind of meeting in the middle there.
Yeah. And not just one team. Like I said, there's been two or three. You look at Pittsburgh. And then also within those games, giving up 3-goal leads, 2-goal leads, back and forth. Look at that, Vancouver, Montreal last night. What was it? 4-0 at one point. But then Vancouver's trailing later in the game and then has to come back and win that one. Just the leads, you know, are blowing me away, the way that things are fluctuating so much in game.
Just add it to the list of wild occurrences in Vancouver this season. We've got you covered there. I'm not gonna step on Tom Durant's toes, because God knows he's probably writing something right now about the latest batch of drama there. Also dramatic, St. Louis Blues. John Hamm knows it. He's here to talk to us about it. Let's throw it to his talk with us next. He was great.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Big get for the Athletic Hockey Show. I think it's safe to say that this is the biggest guest we have had or will ever have. I don't know if Bill Daly really counts on the same level. John Hamm was our guest today. John, how you doing?
Hello. Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this. Is that an Ivan Barbashev St. Patrick's jersey?
St. Patrick's warm up. Perfect. Gotta bring it. My boy 49.
JR told me Barbie's your guy. He's your boy in the Blues. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I got a lot of guys I know on the team, varying degrees of friendship. But for whatever reason, now since I've started making trips up to the booth, almost every time I've been in there, Barbie's done something great. So the last one most recently was in Vegas, and it went down afterwards. He didn't score while I was in the booth. In fact, we gave up a goal while I was in the booth, but afterwards we scored twice. And I happened to be wearing his jersey and O'Reilly's jersey, both of whom scored. I had a little layering going on, but
that's great.
It was really funny. And then after the game, came down to the locker room, said hi to some of the boys, and Barbie comes up and goes, "Come on, you have to come to Colorado." That was their next game, which they won, and then they went on like a 7-game win streak, and now they're kind of sputtering again. So it's a confounding season for sure.
All right, so I was looking, I and a lot of other people were looking for an explanation for the 26-goal season of Barbashev last year. It was because you were dropping in on the booth, and he was scoring goals while you were doing games. That makes sense. It's all coming together.
He was one of, what do we have, 8 or 9 20 goal scorers last year. I mean, it's that was the secret sauce, was that depth. They could just roll those lines out and get production out of them. And you know, for whatever reason, that's really not happening this year. And you know, it's the same players there. It's for the most part. There's a couple glaring glaring absences, 57 and 70 I can point to specifically. But you know, it's you hope guys come in and you know, for a while Chari was taking up that slack, but there's something that's not setting in the jello mold of the team, but they got to figure it out hopefully sooner rather than later.
And John, I know that you're a proud subscriber of The Athletic. You showed me the app one time on your phone. I got to ask you, is the coverage soft, too hard? You're a big fan. You know how the coverage is. What do I got to do here?
I don't think you have to do anything. I think it's great, especially for hockey fans, because there's actual coverage. I mean, it's, you know, hockey's sort of the sport that ESPN forgot about at some point. So it's a nice kind of place to go get your daily news, and that's why I subscribe to it. You know, it's nice to read, and I'm a pretty big fan of the game in general. I watch other teams. I've been up in Calgary, shooting the new season of Fargo, and I've been able to watch a lot of. Obviously, it's a little more widely covered in Canada than it is in the States, but it's been really fun to watch other teams and watch nightly highlights too. And it's been an interesting season. Like, it's been a streaky season, I think, for a lot of teams. And I think we're about a quarter of the way through the season, and I don't think there's anybody that's really taken anything by the horns and established any dominance. I mean, obviously Jersey's had that crazy run, but it's, again, it's just kind of streaky. I feel like they're going to come back to a regress to the mean, as it were. But I don't know. You know, it's a difficult. It's hard to watch the Blues these days. They feel like it's like an engine that's not hitting on all cylinders. So yeah, I think that they'll figure it out. You know, I think that Chief and the coaching staff have a good system that for some reason it doesn't feel like they're playing into. And I think that that's just, it's not a systemic issue. I think it's just something's not, you know, fully baked yet. And I think that once that happens, once the locker room kind of gets solidified and congealed a little better, then I think that they'll really start playing, because they got talent up and down that lineup. You know, you see what Buchnevich has done and Kyrou has done. And, you know, I think once Binnington settles into his role as well, I think it's really going to be, I think this team could scare a lot of people. Not for nothing, they were the only team in the playoffs last year that played Colorado to an even, basically that series could have gone either way. Yeah. If Kadri doesn't run Binnington, I think that's a different result, but you know, we'll see. I think we'll see. That's the fun of watching hockey. It's any, the parity in the league at this point is really, really cool. I was listening to a conversation with Wayne Gretzky talking about, you know, the teams in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and you know, there was such a disparity in those days between the haves and the have-nots, and now it's really anybody's game on any given night. So that's why I tune in.
Have you made it to any games actually in the Saddle Dome yet? Like, did you?
Not yet.
Have
you dropped I'm hoping in? To go. I know. I think Craig Conroy actually has some. Maybe he's the GM or something. But
yeah, he's the AGM, I think. Yeah.
Right, and Kelly Chase's son is playing up in Canmore, which is right up the road, about an hour up into the mountains, and so he's around a little bit. So hopefully, I'll get to go to a game or two. I understand it's a pretty fun arena, and they have a pretty good team. So, yeah, I really enjoy going to hockey games in Canada. It's a whole other experience.
That's my favorite rink up there, is that Saddle Dome.
Yeah, the old Olympic. They built it for the Olympics, right?
Yeah,
it's one of the only. It's one of the only old ones that's left. Like
yeah,
most of
yeah, for
most,
sure.
Most of them have been phased out. We got to get like your review whenever you do make it to a game. You got to go up to
definitely go
the gondola press box. It's like the hanging press box of death. It's
scary as hell, John.
Scares the shit out of every writer. It's like
well, bummed I'm missing, because the Blues are going to be there in late December, and I'm going to miss the game because I'll be down here at home. So unfortunately, I'm off So,
yeah, when I heard you're up in Calgary, I thought you might make that Kachuk return back to Calgary last week.
That would have been a fun one too.
Yeah.
Can you just tell us what's going on with season 5 of Fargo? Can you spill the entire
deal? I can't spill any beans, but it's been it's been really fun to work on so far, and it's a great show. I've been a fan since the first season. So when they asked me to be a part of it, I immediately said yes.
We were talking off mic about Confess Fletch. I watched it when it hit streaming. I did not catch it in theaters, unfortunately. Can you guys just do one of those every like year and a half forever? Is that possible for like you and Greg?
That's the hope. You know, it's funny. Here in my office, I've got all the Fletch novels sitting on my bookshelf, and we're hoping to make our way through them. You know, they did the original novel of Fletch was based on the first book, and then they Confess Fletch was actually the second book, I think, in the series. And so there's quite a few other stories, and it's, you know, Gregory MacDonald was an amazing author. He wrote these incredibly funny and fun, compelling whodunits with a great character at the center of it that obviously Chevy made famous in the 80s. And we kind of took our own spin on it. But Greg Mottola and I, who Greg directed the co-wrote and directed the first version of it, Confess Fletch, he's hard at work on the next one. And we've got some good ideas for it, so hopefully we'll get a chance to do that later in 2023 for 2024 release, maybe. I hope to keep playing the part. It's a really fun part to play, and gives us a lot of fun opportunities to play with casting. And you know, John Slattery got to be in the next. He'll be in the next one, hopefully. So we'll get to work together again, and you know, it's just good stuff.
I somehow missed that Kyle MacLachlan was involved at all. So when he popped up, I was like, this is perfect. All right.
Yeah, we had a blast. You know, Kyle's so great. Marcia Gay Harden is so great. Yeah. We had a really cool group, and we got to shoot in Boston, and we got to shoot in Italy. And so hopefully we're going to get a chance to get the team back together and do it again.
Hey, John, for us not in the film and TV production world, we hear about the long hours with shooting, and obviously you go up to Calgary and you're busy. How do you make time? Is it a balance, you know, to know the Blues schedule and keep an eye on them and watch as much as you can?
It's the great thing about having, you know, a giant supercomputer in your pocket at all times, mm-hmm. is that you're never too far away from either an audio or a visual feed. There's some issues with geo locking sometimes in Canada, that some of the apps don't work the right way, but usually it's pretty, it's nice. It's also great to hear the home broadcast. You know, I love listening to Curbs and Joey on the radio, cause that's the broadcast I'll generally find if I can't get a video feed, and JK and Panger are always great to hear too. So it's nice, especially when you are on location, and it is, as it was this past week, about -7 degrees up there, going maybe minus double digits with a wind chill. So, and work until 3-4 in the morning. So it's nice to be able to go back to your trailer and hear a comforting voice and get warm. And you know, it's better when they win, but even so, it's fun to, you know, that's what being a fan is, you know, is being aware of that and dialing in. I got home yesterday and my girlfriend and her sister, who I've turned on to becoming Blues fans. They became fans in the 2019 season, so they're only used to winning.
Oh man, they're spoiled. What is this?
But we all sat and watched the game last night. So you know, it's fun. It's a fun thing to do. That's what I remember about being when I lived in St. Louis. We'd go to, you know, some bar in Clayton or Brentwood or mm-hmm. somewhere, and with friends and watch the game, eat wings and eat pizza and watch the game, whether it was OB's or you know, fill in the blank.
OB Clark's shout out. Hey, what was colder, Calgary? Or I saw you at the Winter Classic in Minnesota. It was -9 there, John.
That was nuts. That was painful. That was painful cold. You know, and I was dressed for it. I had a big old goose down parka on, the whole deal. That was ridiculous. I walked outside and took a breath and went like, nope, I'm going back in. It was, people had icicles on their eyebrows and eyelashes, and yeah, I don't know how those dudes played in that, but that was a fun game. It was a really fun experience too, and the people of Minnesota were hyped up and excited and friendly. Minnesota nice, as you know, but it was also good to get that win.
Well, how long are you in Calgary? Is it till the end of the month?
No, I'm actually back here working on another project in LA until the end of the month and through the holidays, and then I go back to Calgary for January through the end of March, early April, I think.
Does it ever stop?
Everyone loves Calgary in Calgary in February. It's wonderful.
there's not a lot to block the wind. That's for sure. But they keep telling me about these Chinooks that come through. That. Oh, they're real. Wait for the Chinook, and that's really nice. That's really warms it up. I'm like, what, to zero?
What happens before and after the Chinook? The first time I went to Calgary, I got directly off the plane, like went down the stairs onto a tarmac, and I think I might have cried. Like it felt like it was in February or whatever, and I was like, this is not. Because I'm from Pittsburgh, guys, so I thought I could handle cold. No, it's not. It's not the same.
It's a different. It's a different kind of thing. I felt the same way. I mean, I was like, it just goes right through you. It's just cold. Yeah, cold. And then it'll snow all of a sudden. You're like, there's a foot of snow. Like, whoa. When did that happen?
All right.
Hey, speaking of keeping warm, you might wonder what the hell is he wearing here. I got my Lutheran South letter jacket for you. I know you went to John Burroughs. We're in the same league, ABC.
The ABC league.
I got my, if you can see it here, I got my 99 jersey on. It's a little, okay, it's way tight.
Hey, if it still fits, it still fits. I told you, don't make me go break out my my Burroughs gear. I still have it in there somewhere.
And you played football too, right? So I played end. I sat at the end of the bench, and guard. I guarded the water. So, but you're just only a couple years older than me. You're glad you didn't play me.
Yeah, I played. The ABC League was fun. We were really good. It was always us and Cadasco, and you guys had a couple good years in there. Priory had a couple good years, but yeah, no, it was a very competitive, very fun league, and we played the same guys for the whole, all the way up from C team to B team to then varsity, and it was, you got to get some good rivalries going there, and it was always fun. So I look back on my time as a football player with two remembrances. One of fond remembrance, obviously, of fun and competition, all that stuff, but also just incredible gratitude that I never got injured, because that was, if we look back now on all the stuff in football, and you just think, whew, I dodged a bullet.
You played you played baseball in high school too, right?
Yeah, football, baseball, and swimming were my three varsity sports.
Nice. Wow. Michael Phelps here.
Yeah, it was fun, man. And I go back to Burroughs now, and the facilities that they have are insane. It's like a mid-major college at this point. It's way nicer than the stuff we had, but it's, that's progress, I guess. It's a wonderful institution in many ways, but it was, their athletic program is pretty great, and it's also nice to see that they've put the money in and the support behind not just football and baseball, the track team and the field hockey team and the lacrosse team and all the other stuff that they've done. They've given these kids a real leg up and a real opportunity to do it. And you get kids like Zeke Elliott coming out of Burroughs and Vance Leick's kid. And, there's plenty of opportunity. So that's great. I'm a very proud alumnus of Burroughs.
Good spot. And Sean, just to give you some context here, Burroughs is the best school. They've got all the great facilities, some really smart people that come out of there. But going to Lutheran South, not necessarily a rival, but like I said, in the same league, John, one time it was Burroughs and South and varsity basketball at Lutheran South. And with a couple minutes to go, Lutheran South winning. And instead of the start your bus chant so you guys could leave, I started chanting with the rest of the crowd, "Start your Beamers, start your Beamers."
yeah
we were the rich kids for sure.
I went to the that sounds like I went to the Pittsburgh version of Burroughs. I heard that.
Oh man, look at you.
Heard that one. I rode a public bus to school. Did not have a
Beamer. I was from the wrong side of the tracks too, don't get me wrong. I was
like scholarship kids or whatever. Yeah, it's fine.
I did not have a BMW. I had a 1981 Toyota Tercel 5-speed 3-door, so that should give you some idea.
Yeah, I had the 58U from Greenfield to Oakland. That was my moto. That was my moto competition. So I feel like it's an over-asked question at this point. Like just seeing you do more comedy. I mean, this is, I feel like Fletch in particular, like, is this, it's a long, I feel like it's a long time come in the last few years, right? With the, just seeing you be funny on, like, all the way in full on comedy, yeah. funny movies rather than just, it's, you know, going on, like, going on
it is,
comedy,
it's fun.
Bang, bang,
it's,
going like comedy bang, yeah. Bang or yeah. Whatever. Like,
it's nice to be the lead in something. I've done my fair share of stuff, and whether it's Bridesmaids or 30 Rock or SNL or what have you, but it's nice to be the lead and to actually have some kind of creative input on the stuff that we're doing. And that was the really exciting opportunity that Fletch was able to give me, which was really to kind of put my own stamp on this character that obviously people know and love, and have the Chevy version is a seminal part of a lot of you know, males our age, kind of growing up. You know, I don't know a lot of friends of mine that I grew up with that can't pretty much quote that movie from head to toe. But we wanted to bring it to a new generation, and doing that means that if it was just doing a Chevy impression, then it wouldn't be a really fun experience. It's the idea was to really make it your own, and I was a big fan of the books, and Greg Mottola, who, like I mentioned, had directed the film, was as well. And we were just like, why don't we just do what they do in the books? And it ended up being a really fun, you know, kind of whodunit. That's like, for whatever reason, I think with streaming and Netflix and all this stuff, people are kind of drawn to these fun mysteries, you know, whether really? It's Glass Onion or Knives Out, whatever, what have you. I think that those movies really have a resonance. And that's, telling those stories is fun. There's a reason that people like whodunits, and you even see it in like the Death on the Nile and the Kenneth Branagh ones that they're doing, which is its own kind of thing, but it's also fun. Like, I'd be one of those movies that looks like a blast, you know? So, and in fact, Tina Fey, my old pal from 30 Rock, mm-hmm. is doing the next Kenneth Branagh one, which is like Death in the Egypt. I don't know what it is.
You gotta get involved with, yeah, get involved with that one too. Like whatever. Those casts are, yeah, those casts are gigantic. There's gonna be like 40.
Exactly. 40 plenty of room for an American.
You can make it happen.
Hey, John, I want to hit you with a couple quick things before we let you go here. First thing, Jordan Binnington, we had a laugh when you were in Vegas and you read the lineup. First of all, let me ask you, what was that like reading that Blues lineup that day?
Oh, it was so cool. It was really kind of the team to ask me to do that. And the fact that I happened to be there, I think the team got a kick out of it. And, it's a really cool experience. You know, you don't realize that getting ready for a competition at that level is pretty serious. You know, obviously these guys, it's their livelihood. And so they take it seriously. They're not jacking around and they're getting ready to, you know, make money, hopefully. and it was fun to inject a little levity. And again, like I said, I've known Jordan since he busted onto the scene. We celebrated the cup run together, and O'Reilly the same way, Schenner, Colton Pareko, a lot of those guys from that team I know pretty well. And I gotten to know some of the new guys as well. And it was really fun. It was a fun thing to be able to hang out after the game as well, especially because they won and they were coming off that terrible skid. And so it just felt really fun. And it was a nice thing for the team to do. You know, obviously you don't want to bring, you know, an outsider into that sort of sacred space really too often, but it was very cool. And you know, I love Binner. He is a winner. And he knows, and he's a fiery competitor, as we saw last night.
Yeah, Dad. Did you watch that? Where were you watching last night?
I didn't see it live. I was actually putting the lights on the Christmas tree while that was happening. But I went back and I rewound it. I think, oh, buddy, he just gets fired up, man. You know, and Panger and JK were talking about it at the break, and Bernie was too. And I think that, you know, it's so frustrating when the team's not playing well in front of you. And as a goalie, there's only so much you can do. And, you know, he's an emotional guy and he plays with his emotions, and that can go both ways, obviously. And, you know, when he's on, he's unbeatable. And it's, we saw that, you know, we saw that in that 19 game stretch they had in January of 2019. And then in the cup run, you know, he's an impressive guy, and but he plays with the emotion, and sometimes that can come back and bite him. And I think that frustration just finally boiled over, and, you know, okay, it's one game, you know, he'll be back. He'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, we got a quick clip for you. After you read the lineup and mentioned Benner's name as a starting goaltender, you go for the dab and he missed it. And after the game, you mentioned they did beat Vegas, but he said in an interview with Darren Pang that he had to face some adversity after missing the dab with you. Let's listen to that clip real quick.
One last one for you, because we had John Hamm in the booth. How about him going, JB, you're in the net?
Yeah, it was pretty special. He's a cool dude. I messed up the dab after, but, you know, I had to regroup after that going to the game. So, you know, talk about some adversity. But he's just, yeah, great to see him. Just such good energy to be around. And, you know, I'm happy we got a win.
What do you think about that?
That's funny. That's hilarious. That obviously maybe that inspired him. Talk about playing on emotion. Maybe that gave him the emotion to get out there and shut the door. You know, that it's, they're all great guys. It's so nice. I saw Uri after the game and we walked back to the hotel with those guys. And then, Otter and Binner and some of the guys came out and, you know, it's Vegas. We all went out and had a good time. It was really fun. So, it's just, it's hard to see the team scuffling like that. And, you know, you know that they'll get back right because you know that they're that good. And I was texting Kyrou during their recent, 7-game streak. And I was like, it's good to see you skating with some swagger again, because it really is. It's night and day when those guys are feeling it. You just saw it. You know, they lost 8 in a row with some funky bounces and some weird play. And then they go on a 7-game tear, you know, and it's kind of like, all right, keep playing like that. Don't play like the other way.
Wait, so you announced the Blues lineup. That's like the latest chapter in your work as an announcer. I remember this must have been the 2014 All-Star game. This is like probably when Million Dollar Arm came out. You did Baseball Tonight in your home run call.
Yeah. Yeah. that was pretty terrifying. I got to say, that was at PNC Park. It was, uh-huh. Which by the way, is a beautiful ballpark.
Thank you. Thank you. I helped build it. I was personally responsible for Portland.
It's really great. And I got to say, Pittsburgh fans, super cool.
They're okay. They're fine.
I had to do the, like, call in the highlights. That is hard. That's hard work. I did not realize how difficult that is. And you immediately you think, oh my God, am I going to be the boom goes the dynamite kid? Is that going to be what I sound like? And it's easy to sound like that. It really is to really get, tangled up. And the way the guys do it, they make it look easy and it's not.
We ported the signature home run call, the bye. But I say that like when we're playing golf.
It was Barry Larkin. Barry Larkin was not
happening.
I was like, no, geez. All right.
He no sold you, Barry Larkin.
Yeah, really. I was like, come on, Lark. Jeez.
No, I say that when I'm like at the driving range or whatever, if I connect with one. So it resonated with me personally. So thank you on behalf of me and my friends.
Pulling out an old chestnut.
Hey, John, we can't let you go without asking about this. A lot of news about Ottawa and Ryan Reynolds. Hollywood heartthrob could be an owner in the NHL. What are your thoughts about that? Think it's possible?
I know Ryan a little bit. He's got his fingers in a lot of pies. Good for him, you know. Like I think he owns a cell phone company and a soccer team. And like, why not? I don't see why not. You know, I certainly, if I had Ryan Reynolds' money, I would look into it as well. But he got famous on network TV and then movies, and I got famous on basic cable. So it's there's a little bit of a disparity between the incomes. But no, God bless him. I think that's great. He's obviously a fan, and I think he's Vancouver guy, pretty sure. Yeah. But you know, I would, that's owning a sports franchise has got to be one of the coolest experiences out there. Knowing the guys that I know that own them, they all seem to like it. So good for him.
That was like exactly what Rob McElhenney said in the first episode of that show when they bought when they bought Wrexham. He was like, I have TV money. I needed superhero money. I needed cell phone company money. So I called
exactly. I haven't seen that show yet, but I've seen some clips. It looks pretty cool.
It's good. It's a quick one too.
It's engaging.
Yeah. It totally is. There's like 10 episodes or 12 episodes, but like you can skate through it. It's a lot of fun. And again, it'll help you prepare for whenever you are involved with the Blues ownership group
in 15
or 20 years.
Get in Tom Stumman's group.
Exactly. Well, someday.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, John.
Yeah, thanks for the time, man.
Boys, thank you. Thanks for talking with me. I appreciate it. And let's go Blues.
JR, my only goal going into that interview was to get him to do the baseball tonight. Bye, home run call. That was it. Yeah, I didn't really care about anything else. It's mission accomplished.
Yeah, you impressed me with that. You know, I like movies. I like TV. I try to catch it in my free time. I do watch some John Hamm. I watch Mad Men during the pandemic. It was great. Mm-hmm. I'm really bad, Sean, at memorizing lines or being able to apply them in everyday life. And you're so good at it. So you nailed it there.
Whatever. I'm bad at talking about hockey and I'm bad at talking about the St. Louis Blues. You bailed my ass out there. Thanks, buddy.
Oh, and how about the when I said, hey, John, I'm wearing this Lutheran South varsity coat and I got the jersey on, little tight. And he goes, yeah, a little tight.
Yes, I mean, he wasn't going to completely sell you out. It fit well, by the way. It truly was a little tight. It wasn't extremely tight.
Well, the funny part is a couple of years ago, I saw it in my closet. So I figured I'd try it on and I put it on and I go, hey, this isn't bad. It fits. And then I thought to myself, oh yeah, we wore shoulder pads underneath this.
Dagger. That's fine. Broad-shouldered fellow. Now that was awesome, man.
So much fun.
Thank you for the hookup.
Oh, nothing.
That's it. Let's see what Max Boltman can come through with next week.
Yeah, the pressure's probably on Max. Who, maybe a little
probably,
Bob.
Probably nothing good. Producer Jeff asked me to try to get Michael Keaton for next week. If we're going with co-host civic icon actors, I don't know if I can make that happen. Michael stopped. He stopped taking my calls shortly after the release of Birdman. Unfortunately, we were tight before that though. Got one more segment. It's not quite the only good segment on the show, but it's close enough. Stay tuned.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Hey, Fidelity. How can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
This usually is the only good segment on the show. That is not true this week, thanks to John Hamm. And thanks to that wonderful run of hockey talk we had in segment one. So we're going to stay out of the comments this week. Come back strong. We miss you guys. Answer the troll's riddles. Drop comments in the Athletic app. We love you so very much. It's probably time to talk about the Rangers. I know we kind of, JR, dipped into that in the first segment because they're at least top of mind for you because of what you watched last night. That is a team that is having, if you would have asked someone like me, say at the start of the season, because I'm on record as saying this, thank God I was right for once in my life. This is what worst case scenario looks like for them, because it is the kind of season they had last year in a lot of ways without Igor Shesterkin wallpapering over all their issues. You know, there's some problems with the younger guys. It's just up and down, hot and cold. they don't have the 5-on-5 game to kind of carry them whenever stuff starts to go south. And Shesterkin's at 9-10 on the season. You know, I think that's sort of, you know, it's wild how that sneaks up on people. And it's a testament, I think, to how volatile goalie play can be too, because we all kind of internalized it after the last season or two that Igor Shesterkin was kind of in the group of set it and forget it goaltenders, where you're like, all right, we can count on this guy to be ultra elite, like no questions asked each season, right? There's not many of those guys. There's very, very few. And what we've seen from him so far, again, 9-10 save percentage, he's, you know, creeping back up in goals saved above expected. That's the one reason to think that maybe there's reason, you know, for optimism for them, is that Shesterkin can just kind of snap back into brick wall mode and carry them as far as he did last season. But man, it's touch and go with the Rangers right now. I know people are starting to wonder about Gerard Gallant's future there. You got the James Dolan, you know, variable. That's the big thing, right, JR? We saw it from him a couple years ago where there was a plan in place and he decided that he wasn't down with it. And then before you know it, out goes Jeff Gorton and in comes the tough guys and whatever. Is there any analog that you've been around there wherever you know, he's a good coach who seems well respected. And if you'd have said at the start of the season that, you know, it was going to be December 6th and there was going to start to be whispers over how long for the job he was. Have you been around someone where the worm has turned that quickly on them?
Yeah, first of all, I got to own up here. You were saying you were right about this one. I was absolutely wrong. I had the Rangers, I think, in the Eastern Conference Final, and I had.
I sound like such an asshole when I said that too. I wasn't trying to set myself up to.
No, it's fine. Like you said, you're not right.
To gas myself up there. No. It was blind. It was a classic blind squirrel finds an acorn situation where I was like, I don't know about the Rangers. Yeah. We'll see.
Whatever the opposite of the blind squirrel is what I was, because I had Shesterkin. I think I had him as my Vezina finalist. Fortunately, when we do those polls for the Athletic, they're anonymous, but I guess
our name's not attached to them.
Here and putting
guess who I picked when the Vezina, just guess.
Jordan Binnington.
Yeah, you nailed it. No, it's Jacob Markstrom. Actually, maybe worse than Jordan Binnington. But that's just between you and me and whoever's listening to this. Because, like I said, our name's not attached to that stuff.
It's interesting that you bring up Markstrom's name, because when we were talking about Shesterkin, I'm thinking, are those the two goalies who have come out this year and said, "I'm awful, I'm embarrassed, you know, I'm ashamed."
Yes.
I think it feels like there's been a few of them this year, but definitely Markstrom. And
Markstrom dropped that last week where he was like, I'm playing like shit is what he said. One of those guys actually used the phrase, if not both of them. And we've seen that from Shesterkin and we've seen that from Markstrom. Those are two guys who are, you know, we all know goalies are hard on themselves a lot of the time, but they're maybe uncommonly so. And those are guys like, and this is sort of what I was rambling about at the start of this. Those are guys who, if you would have said at the start of the season, like, who are the five goalies you can count on moving forward, like to this year, like give us your complete list of guys who you can say, you know, maybe write it in ink, maybe not, that they're going to be good. And Markstrom and Shesterkin would have been on my list. Right. Like, I'm like, okay, like who knows? There's not a lot of certainty. That's this volatile position as exists in sports. Goaltending is voodoo, blah, blah, blah. But those would have been guys who I was like, all right, I'm fine going into the season with one of them is, you know, and saying that they're going to provide, you know, well above average goaltending. We haven't seen it, right?
Yeah, and I'm surprised with what's going on with the Rangers. The interesting part is, you know, as beat writers, we cover our team and we know how teams like the Rangers do against your team that you cover. And I remember, I think last year, year before, Rangers, real good game against the Blues. And I said on press row, I said, gosh, the Rangers look good. And everybody looked at me who covers the Rangers on a nightly basis and said, yeah, that's not normal what we saw right there tonight. And so last night, similar situation, you know, Rangers come out against the Blues, 9 scoring chances, 12 shots on goal in the third period, come back and win that game. But you listen to the people, you know, like yourself, who've been probably watching a little more Ranger games than I have. And you know that they haven't been as nearly as consistent as we saw them come out last night in that third period.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to need from those guys moving forward. They're going to need Lafreniere to to produce consistently, and they're going to need some of those. I think Kaapo Kakko hit three posts in that game. Were you keeping track of that? It was insane. Like they need more from those guys. That's one of the other variables that, you know, we can track with that team moving forward. The other thing, this is Scotty Powers has a piece about this up on the site. We are already at the point in the season, probably past the point in the season, where it's time to start thinking about what's next for Patrick Kane, the Blackhawks specifically. And we can't talk about a Patrick Kane trade without bringing up the Rangers. That's always, you know, for a lot of reasons, that's the team that he's most attached to. One of them being that, you know, Artemi Panarin, I think Mark Lazarus called them hockey soulmates last week, which is true.
Yeah.
And the idea of them, you know, reuniting, that's always going to be, you know, kind of a frontline story. But just a quick recap here from what Scotty wrote this morning. Seems like the thought is that Kane's more likely than Taves to move at this point. Seems like maybe Kane, especially over the last couple of weeks, is moving in that direction, and that the Rangers, you know, still seem like a potential fit, even though they've had an up and down run here. From them, man. You watched a lot of Patrick Kane over the course of your career. You watched a lot of Patrick Kane and Artemi Panarin. So I don't know what's the view of a guy who's covered a Central Division team and seen more of that guy, you know, over the course of his career than anybody. How much juice do you still have? Let's focus in on that. What has he looked like to you over the last year or two versus the guy who we saw 5 or 6 or 7? Like how much gas does he have left in the tank?
Yeah, first, Sean, I want to give Blues fans a chance. If you guys could turn down the volume on
this can't be all about St. Louis. Go on.
If Blues fans could turn down the volume just for a second. Okay, you've done. Okay.
You guys got enough.
I like watching Patrick Kane play.
Whoa! So,
here, okay, now we can tell him to turn the volume back up.
Okay, turn it back up.
he's one of the most gifted players I've ever watched play. And so obviously during the heyday, so much fun to watch. You know, what have we seen here lately? Listen, I've seen the Blackhawks a few times this year, and you never want to say that Patrick Kane isn't giving it his all and playing his heart, mm-hmm. because that's the type of guy he is. But I agree with what Mark and Scott have written. I've read it all. And, you know, it's a tough situation for Patrick Kane. And, you know, that team's not going anywhere. And if the rebuild's going to take a few years, you know, what does it leave for him? So we'll go back to these anonymous Athletic polls. I'm up here and say I picked Buffalo. But this one, Buffalo was going really, really well. And all that cap space, I pictured Patrick on the Buffalo. But the Rangers make sense. And, you know, you talk about soulmates. He definitely is with Panarin. He just seemed crushed when that move happened years ago in Chicago. So that'd be fun to watch.
That was it. That was it, right? That was the beginning of the end for them. That was when you realized that they were not, you know, for better or worse, that they were giving up on the idea of being a true, like, top end, top three, top five team for the foreseeable future. I voted for the Islanders, by the way, as the Kane destination. I was like, okay, it's New York. Lou's gonna find some way to get something done. Of course, if he ends up on the Rangers or ends up staying put, you know, I'm gonna disavow that choice and say that I picked whichever team he ended up on. You know, it is funny too. At the start of the season, everybody, it seemed like there was momentum saying like, no, don't be surprised if Patrick Kane sticks around. You know, he loves playing in Chicago. Milestones are important to him. Being a Blackhawk for life is something that he's always kind of, you know, is always sort of angled towards. That's all well and good. And I don't mean to doubt the sincerity of that, right? Because that sort of stuff is important and it does mean something to people. But it's a lot different to say that at the start of the season with all the optimism that everybody always has in October. And it's a wholly different thing for that to last until December or whenever you are the Chicago Blackhawks and you are losing games at the rate you were designed to lose them, right? Like we're looking at a team now that's 7-13-4, 375 points percentage, 1-8-1 in their last 10 games. They're ahead of the Anaheim Ducks, who are one of the worst teams I've ever seen in my life, and the San Jose Sharks in the Western Conference. That team is as bad as they're supposed to be. And the reality of that is something that you really can't discount setting in for guys like Kane and Taves. It's easy to be psyched about sticking around and saying that sort of stuff. But when you're losing, you know, 9 out of 10, things are completely different, right?
Well, to me, the biggest thing is, hey, even if they finish last in the league this year, which, you know, looks possible, and do nothing this year, you know, if I'm Patrick Kane, that's not the what's making my decision on whether I want to stay or go. It's the next 2 to 3 years. Like, so do you want the last 4 to 5 years of your career to be just wilting away and not having any line mates and things like that? Or do you want to be 55 years old and know for the last couple of years of your career, you went to the Rangers and played in the Stanley Cup finals and, you know, put up points and played with a guy that you really click with and had a great end to your career. So to me, it's more about the big picture of these last 2 or 3 or 4 years, however much he has left, than it is how this season goes.
That was always the faulty assumption that the Blackhawks were going to come out of this quickly. Like, it's not that easy. This is a team that was, you know, sold for parts over the last couple of years outside of a few. Right. So the assumption, you know, yeah. And if they end up finishing last and, you know, draft Connor Bedard and then maybe Patrick Kane after getting traded comes back and does the thing that everybody always expects is going to happen and doesn't, which is a team getting traded and then a player getting traded and then returning. It's always like the pipe dream thing that everyone says is going to happen. And it very rarely actually does, except in the case of your friend and mine, David Perron. It always comes back to the St. Louis Blues, right? Is that the way it goes?
Yeah, no, definitely for him. Is he going to come back another time?
I don't know.
You know, I might have told you this.
You tell me. I don't know shit about that team. You're the guy. You were John.
No, I do remember. I've told this one a couple times, but keep it short. Is when David Perron came into the St. Louis at age 19. I said, hey, one day I'm going to write a book about you. I don't know why I said that. And then now here we are 15, 16 years later, he's come back like 10 times. And so now the book kind of writes itself. But little did I know that's how it was going to play out.
He won the cup. He's going to come back next year. I think we've all kind of internalized that. It's an easy end. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. Let's go. Let's make it happen.
Cup out of all that, right?
Yeah, supposedly. Thanks for the time, JR. You're the best.
It was great. So how many people are going to fast forward through us talking and just get to the Ham interview?
You know what? I'm not going to give a number because I try not to drop stuff like that, but I will say it's going to be high 90s in terms of percentage. It's fair. Nobody wants to listen to our bullshit. Just go to John Hamm talking about, you know, hockey and Fargo and whatever else. It was a blast. And I'm glad you were here for it. I'm glad you made it happen. Because God knows Craig wasn't going to be able to pull that off. I'll tell you that much. He doesn't have that kind
Craig
of juice.
Is he on vacation again?
I don't know. I don't think who cares. Next week, Max Boltman is in the co-host chair. Craig's out again. He's back on December 20th to do whatever it is he does around here. Max, he's here next week. JR, again, thanks for you know, bringing some adult energy to the podcast, because I'm clearly a little kid left alone with the controls, and I needed a steady hand. So thank you again. Rob Pizzo, Joe Smith, and Jesse Granger are welcoming Peter Baugh on the round table this week. It's always fun. Pete's the funniest. And don't forget to subscribe to the Athletic Hockey Show on YouTube, youtube.com/@sign. Not the words at sign, but the actual symbol on your keyboard. @ the Athletic Hockey Show. You can follow us on your favorite podcast platform, leave a rating and a review. And the offer is back. Annual subscriptions to The Athletic. They're just $2 a month for a year. What a great deal. Never see anything like that around here. You can visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Jump on that. Again, Max is here next week. Craig is back on December 20th. This has been Tuesday Boys. Hashtag Tuesday Boys 3Zs. Bye.
Bye.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.